Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel. Talking Terps is brought to you courtesy of Mercer Floor and Home Carpet One. Mercer is a third-generation family business established in 1959 and located on Main Street in beautiful historic downtown Westminster, Maryland of Carroll County. For all of your flooring needs, think Mercer. So Maryland's basketball team continues their struggles. They've opened conference play with a 2-4 record. They're going to face off against Michigan for the second time this season on Thursday night at home in College Park. Mike Popova couldn't be here with us, but I've got Pat Donahue here to help me break everything down. Pat, how's it going, man?
Going good, Zach. It's been a while. Obviously, the basketball team has not been doing all that great since the last time we chatted, but, there's only one direction to go from here, hopefully.
Very true. So they've got a current record of 11-6. They're 2-4 in conference, as I just mentioned. They've won just one of their last four games. KenPom's got them at 43rd in the country, 9th in the Big Ten, which pretty much corresponds to where we figured they would be before the year, before they probably won too many games and got everybody's hopes too high. They did pick up a good win against Ohio State, but it just seems like the way that this year is going to go, it's going to hinge on whether they're able to shoot the ball or not. And more often than not, they just haven't been able to.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is kind of weird how much of an aberration the beginning of the season seems like at this point. You know, they got us all excited with a couple nice wins and obviously starting the season off 8-0. The weird thing, I guess, kind of the silver lining to all of this is that really, besides Purdue, no one in the Big Ten is looking all that great. Ohio State, who's been one of the teams in the conference that's been ranked most of the year, I mean, they're struggling. I think they've lost four in a row. They're struggling just as much, if not more, than Maryland right now. Michigan, our upcoming opponent, I know they shellacked us a few weeks ago, but they don't look that impressive or all that good. They're a team that looks like they could win or lose any given night. So, we have a chance for some revenge coming up this Thursday. And Purdue after that, that's obviously, I think we would all expect that to go pretty rough. But if you're not shooting well, you're not going to beat many teams. So they need to get back to what they were doing early in the season, and that is getting easier shots, easier looks based off of ball movement and moving without the ball. Obviously the level of competition has increased a little bit, so it's not just, it's not like they've totally changed what they're doing. You got to give some credit to what the defenses are doing, but you're not going to be a very good basketball team at any level if you can't shoot the ball when teams are forcing you to shoot the ball and taking away those cutting lanes and those passes. So, they got to figure it out. They got to figure out who their shooters are and get the ball in their hands.
And, I mentioned this when I talked to Mike a couple weeks ago, and that was that it seems like, obviously, when you're not shooting the ball, it's hard to win. You're not going to put points up. But it also seems like they have a confidence issue. They get into rough starts in games where they're not shooting the ball well, and then their defensive intensity, which should be able to keep them in games for longer stretches when they're not able to shoot, but it seems like that starts to lag. And it seems like the more they lose and the more they get out to those rough starts and the more they shoot the ball poorly, the less confidence they have. And if that's going to translate to the defensive end, you're not going to have a chance in any of these games. The hope would be if you're not shooting, you could at least scrap out a few, but they're just getting the doors blown off of them because they get into these rough starts and then they're allowing easy transition baskets and easy cutters, and they're just blowing defensive assignments.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they can't do. I mean, to steal an old Turgeon phrase, they are letting their offense affect their defense and vice versa. So, you would think if you are struggling at one end, if you're struggling on the offensive end, you could make up for some of that with just some more effort on defense and with some easy buckets in transition and some forcing some turnovers. So, Yeah, it's surprising because based off what we saw early in the season, we thought we'd have a grittier team. You know, someone led by Dante Scott, who's a pretty gritty player, and you know, senior backcourt and all that stuff. So it's a little concerning, a little disconcerting, I should say, what we've seen recently from them. But it has been around the holidays. It has been, you know, everyone seems to be dealing with, whether it be COVID or a cold or the flu. I'm sure everyone knows someone that has had something or has had it themselves. So perhaps, you know, you can't use that excuse forever. We're now almost through January. So perhaps we'll see them gain some traction. Now would be the time. But yeah, they're not, they're running out of time to get it together. They really have to get some wins here if they want to have any shot at being a tournament team or living up to the expectations that people bestowed upon them early in the season.
Yeah, and like you said, the Big Ten, you know, coming into the year, it looked like it was going to be stacked. And right now, it just looks like there's a lot of teams that are jockeying for that mid-level position where you've got Purdue obviously at the top, although they do have a loss to Rutgers. They have close call victories against Nebraska, Ohio State, and Michigan State. So they don't look like world beaters. And then you've got Rutgers is all of a sudden the second best team in the conference. You got Ohio State behind them. Indiana was supposed to be fantastic. They've fallen off a cliff. They're 2-4 in conference. And, you know, you're looking at head coaching candidates up there again. So, you know, it's hard to know, you know, you look at who is bad. And I think I've mentioned this multiple times this year. It's like, well, we don't quite know who's good other than Purdue. And that's still the case. But we felt like we sort of knew who was bad, but like Minnesota's bad, but they just beat Ohio State, and Nebraska's bad, but they almost beat Purdue. So it's really hard to know on any given night how the Big Ten's going to shake out. And for Maryland, you got to be looking at that going, man, if we can string together a month or two of good play headed into March, you know, you've got a shot, not just in the conference, but to sneak into the tournament.
Yeah, like you would think that they would be looking at what's going on in the Big Ten and look at the landscape of the conference and say that, you know, everything that they want is still ahead of them. And that's why even, you know, sort of tongue in cheek, but not really, like, even bring up the fact that they could be a tournament team still, just because there's so much bad basketball, not just in the Big Ten, but outside of the Big Ten. There's just a lot of middling teams out there that just aren't grabbing the bull by the horns, and it's leaving the door open for teams like Maryland. If they can rediscover what it was that had them clicking early in the season, and they can rattle off some of these wins against other struggling Big Ten teams. Like you said, I mean, I think we got one good team and 13 bad teams right now is what it looks like to me. I mean, I can't say any of them are good. They really seem like they could lay an egg on any given night. So yeah, I mean, why not Maryland out of that group? It's, I think there's some other teams amongst them. I think that Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, that maybe they have a leg up in terms of where they are as a roster and didn't just go through a coaching change and all that stuff, where I may, you know, those are the teams that I really expect to kind of dig themselves out of the hole that they've been putting themselves in. But there's no reason why Maryland can't be right behind that group, and certainly ahead of teams like Minnesota and Nebraska and, you know, teams like that.
It's a weird year in college basketball. Apparently Kentucky sucks. So that's, I don't know when the last time that's happened. So
they did just win. I think they beat Tennessee, or they beat some good team recently, but like, I've watched them play several times this year and I thought they were going to be good. They stink. They don't play any defense.
Well, we have a few of those teams in the Big Ten. Iowa and Purdue don't play any defense, and they pretty much never have under their respective coaches.
No. And yeah, I mean, outside of it's, you know, it's a weird year when Purdue's like the top team for most of the season and Houston's in the mix. And yeah, I don't know. It's definitely one of the weirder college basketball seasons for me in recent memory, where I don't even, if you ask me to pick a team that I think is the best in the country right now, I wouldn't feel great picking any of them. You know, like, you could say Houston, you could say Purdue, you could say Tennessee, you could say a whole lot of teams, but I don't think there's any consensus pick this year.
Well, I think, and we've seen it over the last couple of years with the transfer portal, you're seeing these mid-level, not just even the mid-majors, but just the mid-level major conference teams that are able to pick up some, not necessarily even leftovers, but some contributors who aren't necessarily getting the minutes that they want or aren't in the best situation at their massive blue blood programs, and they're able to come in and make a difference and knock off some of those teams. And what you're left with is less great teams and more average to above average teams. And you're seeing that not just in the Big Ten, but around the country, and it's going to make for an interesting tournament, as always. Yeah. But it makes it even more interesting when you're able to add key pieces like that to teams that wouldn't necessarily be able to recruit those players initially.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I agree with what you said. I think it's shaping up for a lot more parity now and moving forward. And, you know, we'll probably have an exciting NCAA tournament like it always is. It doesn't make it any easier to pick those games, but it never is. And we might more frequently, I know there's always upsets in the tournament, but we might more frequently now see double digit seeds go on Elite Eight and Final Four runs with just kind of the way things are shaping out around college basketball. Based off of what Maryland's doing in recruiting, the future looks promising. Maybe we can get back to where we're talking about them being not just a tournament team, but one of the contenders. But right now, I think, you know, keeping goals realistic, if this team can just right the ship right now and stop the bleeding and get themselves in that conversation, at least become a bubble team and not let this get any worse, I think that would be considered a big win in Willard's first season.
And I think what one of the main pieces that starts with is Julian Reese. When I look at the roster, I mean, this is a guy who it was supposed to take a major step from freshman to sophomore year. He's a big man. Willard brought Grant Billmeyer with him, who's kind of a big man wizard as far as an assistant coach. And he's just, he hasn't taken that step that we expected. He's averaging 10.7 rebounds a game, shooting 52% from the free throw line, and he's been bad recently, 7 points and 6 rebounds over the last 5 games. And the last time they played Michigan on New Year's Day, he scored just 2 points in 16 minutes. And I think, for me, what's even more troubling than the numbers is the juvenile attitude that he gets when he gets frustrated. So he'll elbow somebody in the face and commit a technical flagrant foul, or he's pouting on the sidelines and his body language is bad. And when you're looking at the roster, this is your center, this is your big man. You know, he should be showing a lot more fight. He should be staying in games because there's really no depth behind him. And instead, you're lucky to get 20, 24 minutes of him a game because he gets into silly foul trouble, committing the silly fouls that we all kind of expected him to take a step on that this year, and he just hasn't. So, you know, hopefully he can right himself, but, you know, it's been really frustrating and disappointing to watch a guy like him with that much talent take such a, or not even take a step back, but just not take the step forward that we all knew he needed to this year.
Yeah, and I apologize if there was any dead air there. My Wi-Fi was a little laggy, but Julian Reese, I agree with everything you were saying about him and the fact that he's probably the focal point of these issues with the roster, because like you said, not only has the production not been there from a numbers standpoint, but it's just the body language has been bad. There's been no leadership there. In the beginning of the season, he's been poor from the free throw line all season. And last year he wasn't, so you thought he could turn that around, and he hasn't. But at least in the beginning of the season, he was a little bit more effective offensively and defensively. And now that has gone out the window. So it's strange because when he after his sister decided to transfer from the women's team and he stayed, and you thought that was probably a sign of maturity and leadership, you didn't expect to get this type of reaction and this type of immaturity from him overall. So perhaps, I don't know, maybe there's things going on behind the scene personally and things aren't working out great with him. It's a shame because when you look at the roster, he's really the one young piece that you look at as a building block for the future. And if he's not, then we really are starting with a bare cupboard next year. I don't know. From what I can see from the outside looking in, it looks like there's not a great relationship there between him and the coaching staff, and maybe even his teammates, who knows. But you would think if there was, that you'd be getting you know, if the production's not yet there, that's one thing. But and you talk about taking that next step, I think we all thought he would, and that clearly hasn't happened yet. But, you know, it's never going to happen if he can't get his head on straight.
Yeah, it seems like there's been multiple occasions over the last few weeks where Willard has called timeouts just to yell at him for stupid stuff that he's doing on the court. And you can't have that. It's one thing to be making those mental and other mistakes on the court as a freshman, but as a sophomore who's been in the program with that much talent, there's really no excuse for it. And you hate to pile on a kid, but, you know, hopefully everything's okay with him personally, but he's got to do better. If this team's going to make a run, he's going to have to play better. And there's other players as well that have been struggling. Dante Scott, Hakeem Hart, after hot starts for both of them shooting the ball, they're both averaging, Scott's averaging 10 points over the last five and Hart's averaging 9. And they're not shooting the ball well from beyond the arc. Really, the entire team is struggling there. But those are two guys that, again, if you're going to make a run, they've got to play better. And Dante Scott, especially, you know, he's a guy who started the season off super hot. And it looked like, you know, he had lost all this weight, really remade his body. He was more athletic. He was confident driving to the hoop and also taking shots from beyond the arc. And it seems like recently he's been hesitant to put the ball on the floor and use his agility and use that smaller frame in order to his advantage. He seems to just want to hang around the three-point line and chuck up shots that aren't falling right now. And what he needs to do clearly is go to the rim. And I think we saw a little bit of that over the last two games, a little bit more. He's got to do more of it, especially if he's going to continue to struggle shooting the ball from three.
Yeah. And I think not just with Dante, but with the whole team, I think they need to become a little bit more self-aware and realize that, I mean, anyone could have looked, even before the 8-0 start and before the season started, anyone could have looked at this roster and said the biggest deficit is perimeter shooters. You know, if Dante Scott and Hakeem Hart are two of your better shooters on the team, that's a problem because they might have their stretches where they're hot from beyond the arc, but they're not. Neither of those guys are pure shooters. They're guys that bring a lot of other things to the floor and have very complete games. And it's a great compliment that they can hit an outside shot every once in a while. But to be shooting at the rate that they're shooting and to be considered primary shooters on this team, it's no wonder why the shooting numbers have been so bad. But if you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole all season, and part of me can understand why they'd be doing that, because the way basketball is these days, you're not going to win many games not shooting threes. But if you're that bad at shooting threes, you really got to play to your strengths. And this team should be really that grind it down, almost like a UVA style team, maybe minus the three-point shooting a little bit, because UVA's had some snipers in the past. But we just do not have that player on this team. So this is going to have to really be a gritty team that grinds games out. And it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be fun for players like Dante Scott, who have to drive every single time he wants to get a bucket or has to get most of his points from the foul line. But that's the only way I see this team gaining traction on offense and righting the ship a little bit, is becoming that kind of grinding, get a lot of your points from the free throw line type of team. And unfortunately, what comes with that is on the nights where you're not getting the calls, or on the nights where a team is hitting their 3-point and you're trading 2 for 3, they're not going to be good games for you. And you're probably going to be an average team at best. But it's that could be better than trying to shoot your way out of this and then being a abysmal team.
Yeah, and Don Carey was supposed to be that guy that was reliable as a shooter who really isn't a huge part of his game. Historically, at Georgetown, he was a great shooter from outside. Now, lately, last five games, 41% from three. So maybe he's starting to figure out, although he's super streaky. He was 0 for 8 against Michigan on New Year's Day, and then he'll go where he's like 5 for 7. So it's a game-to-game thing for him. But I think Jameer Young kind of embodies what they should be doing. He's got that floater. He's able to get into the lane, absorb some contact. That's the type of game that they should be, because he's not a great shooter from three. I think he's less than 30% on the year. Right. But he's able to get into the lane. And 30 points against Ohio State, 20 against Iowa, he's really been able to lead this team scoring-wise. They need to follow that lead, get into the paint, get dirty, and draw some fouls.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. He's the type of point guard you would want to run the type of offense that I was just describing. And obviously, you know, he's more of the distributor, so they're not going to be looking at him as the primary shooter. And you're right, Don Carey is that guy. But, I mean, on any other team, he's not that guy. He's just a guy. And, we don't have a I'm talking they need like a Kevin Huerter type. I know those don't grow on trees, but you need someone who even this team could even use a Jarrett Nickens, as sad as that is to say. But even if someone could hang out in the corner and just hit some corner threes, that would be welcome for this team, which let me see offensively. Yeah. KenPom, 287th in the country in 3-point percentage. That's bad.
Yeah, and they just keep chucking them up, and it's pretty clear that there needs to be a wholesale changes as to what shots they're taking, because they're not what I talked about with Mike 2 weeks ago. They're really not taking that many bad shots on paper, but when you look at their 3-point percentage and the guys that are taking the shots, they need to be taking different good shots. So create some shots underneath. Of course, it would really help if you had a center who was reliable in the post, and they really don't have that. They should.
Right.
He's got the talent to do it, but he's just not put it together yet. But yeah, it's pretty bad when Ian Martinez and Jahari Long are your best 3-point shooters.
That is bad. Yeah. I mean, you're right. If they had the reliable center, it would make a little bit more sense. But the fact that you pair that with the poor shooting and the volume at which they're shooting, it just, you know, maybe they should be trying to get a more old-fashioned 3-point plays, driving to the rim and drawing contact.
Absolutely. So you mentioned recruiting. I know there's been a little bit of activity with that basketball-wise. Catch us up on what Maryland's looking at. Obviously, they've got a few guys in the class already for next year. I know Derek Queen's a big 2024. There's no talk about Queen reclassifying to next year, is there? Like we might have lost Pat. So I'm just going to talk until his Wi-Fi comes back. I know recruiting-wise, Maryland's been doing some good things on the basketball front. We lost Pat. So I'm going to go ahead and stop this, and we're going to hop back on with Pat, so stick with us.
That works.
All right, we're back. Pat's got his internet fixed for a couple minutes, so I'm gonna have you break down recruiting for us real quick, basketball-wise.
Yes, going to be quick here because at the mercy of some crappy Wi-Fi. But, a couple names to keep on the radar. some people have probably seen this reported in other outlets. Maryland hosted several guys over the weekend, one of which being a 7-footer out of IMG, who would be for next year's class, for the 2023 class. His name is Braden Pierce. He has a decent number of high major schools in the mix for him, like Pitt, Seton Hall, NC State, South Carolina. But Maryland was his first and only official visit so far. So that's sets up good for them in that realm. Obviously in need of a big man next year, so that would help. Obviously, given what we've been discussing about Julian Reese, it might even be an even bigger need next year. So there's a name to keep in mind. That's for the 2023 class. And then obviously there's been a lot of headway going in the 2024 recruiting class. Daquan Davis is a local kid who recently visited. We have Thomas Sorber. Another guy, he's a Philly guy, so he's from my neck of the woods. He is on Maryland's radar, and he has had an offer for several months right now, but they're going to hopefully get him back on campus after he visited earlier in this season and saw a game earlier in the year. And then they got several Baltimore guys, a 4-star Luke Bamboye, and you also have Drew McKenna, a 4-star out of Baltimore. and then another IMG guy in Connie Ruth's, another four star. So a lot of four stars on the radar right now, obviously adding to a or not adding to the 2023 class, trying to get the 2024 class up and running, and then obviously building upon the momentum for the 2023 class. So it's a shame to have, you know, all these high-end recruits on campus for some of these games that haven't been going so well, but all this stuff kind of gets worked out ahead of time, and then, you know, you recruit on campus when you can get them on campus. So that's not necessarily the biggest detail, wins and losses. You know, these recruits know that they're part of kind of a rebuilding process here at Maryland. So I wouldn't be too concerned about the product that they're seeing when they do come to these games. Some could even say that it shows them that they'll have, you know, more access to playing time and have a bigger impact right away. So wouldn't worry too much about that, but I think it's good. It's good that IMG is becoming a good source of talent, clearly, and Willard and his staff are heavily going after the Baltimore area, where I felt like Turgeon's staff, obviously they recruited Baltimore as well, but I felt like they really focused in on some Northern Virginia and D.C. Schools a lot, which also have great talent, but you know, Baltimore might have some lower hanging fruit for this rebuilding program.
Yeah, so the coaching staff obviously has an ability to kind of remake the team next year. You look at the roster, a lot of upperclassmen, Young, Carey, Hart, Gott. You know, Reese is kind of, like you mentioned, the only guy who's going to absolutely, well, not absolutely be back, but he will absolutely be eligible next year no matter where he is, whether he's here or elsewhere. So we'll see how all that shakes out. Be sure to stay post it with us on the message board. Also, you can obviously follow Pat on Twitter to follow everything Maryland recruiting to keep tabs on the 2023 and 24 classes. We all have articles up at BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com, so be sure to check those out. Join the conversation on the message board and follow the show on Twitter at TalkingTerpsBSL. For my co-host, Pat Donahue, I'm Zach Kiesel. Roll Terps.